Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
It's Candace
and Kayla,
and you're listening to
Directionally Challenged.
We really thought by our 30s that we would have everything figured out,
but surprise, we don't.
So let's stop and ask for directions from today's guests, Aisha Tyler and Karina McKenzie. I don't even know how to begin to introduce these amazing women. You might know Aisha Tyler from the million of TV shows that I'm already fangirling over. I can't even get through trying to say this correctly. And I was really excited to try to say it correctly. She's literally on 4 network television series right now. You can find her on Whose Line Is It Anyway on the CW. You can find her on Archer on FX. You can find her on Criminal Minds on CBS, on Unapologetic on AMC. What? She's been in this business for a long time. I used to watch her stand-up comedy. She's written books. She's just an all-around badass woman. Oh my gosh.
We also have a dear friend of ours and someone we absolutely admire and love, Karina McKenzie. She has a brand new show coming out to the CW called Roswell, New Mexico. She was also a producer on The Originals and a huge friend and fan of a little show called The Vampire Diaries.
Yeah, we got to know her way back in the day because she was a journalist and she would interview us for The Vampire Diaries. She went on within that time to start working for The Originals and ended up becoming a producer on that series, as well as one of the head writers. And now here she is at the CW. She's our age. She's 31 years old, and she has her own show and a 2-year development deal with the CW. These women are so wonderful. They have so much going on in their life, in their career. They also happen to be best friends. And so today you might notice that this episode is a lot longer than our other episodes. We just could not stop talking with them. So there's really not much to say at the top.
Just stay tuned, listen, and
let's get into it. Let's find our tribe. Oh my goodness. I don't even know how to introduce you guys because just going through Wikipedia pages today took a very long time.
One of them is slightly longer than the other.
Guys, I spent a lot of time curating my Wikipedia page. It's like a big part of my day.
We have Aisha Tyler and our friends Karina McKenzie. Oh, my goodness. Okay, Aisha, just now you have three network television series going on.
Four
network television series. Gosh.
I'm a greedy bastard. No. Really unkind.
Well, you have Archer, Unapologetic.
Whose Line is in any way? Criminal Minds.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So you're just bored all the time.
That's unusual. That's on Tuesdays.
That's unusual on Wednesdays.
I mean, like, I know that that's unusual. It's not like I'm like, doesn't everybody have those? I'm all, when are they coming to my house to take me away? I mean, I know it's like an unusual situation, so it won't last forever, but it's been interesting.
Knowing you, it's going to last forever. So cool.
And I think it has lasted forever. I mean, it looks like you've just been working nonstop forever, according to Wikipedia, since 2001.
Punctuated by long periods of like intense credit card debt. I got auditioned for Talk Soup and it seemed like it went well, but then I just didn't hear anything and I didn't hear anything and I didn't hear anything and I had another job offer, so I took it. It was for this dating show called The Fifth Wheel.
I remember
which
that.
I just took because like I needed a job, and then like right after that I got Talk Soup, so then I had two shows. And I was like, what? And then I was like, I really hate this other show I'm doing where like people just get drunk and then someone gets on a bus and gives everybody crabs. So I quit it. And then
I loved that show.
Thank you. Okay, good. Because people still love it, but I was just so sad. The show made me so sad. And then so I quit that show. And then right after that, Talk Soup got canceled. So I went from like two shows to no shows like really fast.
Oh, wow.
So, and I don't know that I thought like I'll have two shows forever, but I remember thinking I'd have a job longer than I did. And then I had like a couple of periods where I was like super broke.
Wow. Do you think that experience made you be willing to just be open to everything
totally.
At that point?
Oh, yeah. Take any job. Absolutely. Yeah. I'll do anything. I'll work anywhere. Yeah. I mean, it just made me feel more like, for me anyway, and I think like for all of us, like as artists, like it's the part that's not fun is the part where you always feel like you have your hands out. Like, you know, please, sir, may I have some more? Do I have permission to be, you know, yes. And if you don't get permission, it's not just a statement about like where the business is. It's like about you, like you're not good enough to work. And I hated that feeling. So I just started doing stuff. Not a lot of it didn't pay, just so I would at least feel engaged in my life and not disconnected. Because, you know, when you're not working as an artist, you feel like wildly disconnected from the world. Uh-huh. And it can really fuck with your self-esteem.
I do nothing unless there's so much money.
Karina has the better of the two philosophies, by the way.
Even Karina, the queen of doing. I mean, we met way back in the day. Yeah. There's Zap to it.
I was a journalist and I interviewed Candace.
Like
I had a whole other life. Yeah. I had a whole other life. And all I did was interview the Vampire Diaries cast. Yeah. Literally, I just like
it was your favorite show.
It was my favorite show. And I like they were so nice to me and they gave me so much access. And they sort of like eventually they were like, you want to come to dinner after the interviews? And finally I was just like, oh my God, they're letting me on the bus at Comic-Con.
But we're also the same age. Mm-hmm. Like we were all so young and so excited. It's not like you came to visit the set and we were all like seasoned actors, you know? No, we're all like young and crazy living in Atlanta, Georgia and on a hit TV series for the first time. We're like, let's go to Noni's and get crazy.
So mm-hmm. as the casters experienced their first time, you were experiencing your first time.
Literally my first time ever on a television set was at the Vampire Diaries. It was season 2 premiere. And I tell the story all the time, but like Michael Trevino sort of saw how terrified I was. I was terrified. And he was like, do you want to go for a walk? It was like middle of summer. It was a million degrees out. And we walked around the Lockwood Mansion. And he was like kind of showing me what it's like to be on set. And he was so nice to me. Now he works for me.
Oh, no,
but that's so delicious. Like, that's
and now I'm his boss.
And now you're his boss.
So lesson to everyone, be nice. You never know where it will get you.
Yo, seriously, be nice. Like, I mean, like, mm-hmm, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like also in this business more than any other business, but specifically in this business now, like non-niceness will catch you. And I don't even mean just in the context of Me Too. Like, it just used to be like terrible behavior was tolerated and enabled and constantly covered up for. And now I just think everyone's like, it's just not enough time in the day to like deal with assholes.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a series. There were a lot of our crew members from Vampire worked on a bunch of other series before that. And there was a series a couple of them had worked on where they would specifically tell someone that the call time was an hour and a half beforehand because they would just always be an hour and a half late. Mm-hmm. And so the entire production would accommodate like a fake call sheet.
Oh my God.
Where you're just like, how does it get to that point?
How can it?
But it does. Enabling. But it does. Enabling. It's so much enabling. Uh-huh. So I'm so grateful that it's finally like, no, can we exactly stop being assholes? Like, can we just respect other people's time? And like, no one should be treated better than someone else if we're all here to just get the same product done and the same goal accomplished.
It's part of what I love about TV is like we're collaborating. We are all contributing to the final product. Mm-hmm. Every single person from the top to the bottom. We all want the thing to be good.
Yeah.
And so if people are getting treated like their piece of the pie is more important than the other piece of the pie, no. If there's a shitty piece of pie, it's a shitty pie.
Right. No, absolutely. And also I think the idea that you can like undermine and treat the people around you like shit and it's not going to affect your work. It's just a false construct because eventually people just aren't going to support you, aren't going to give you the energy that you need to do your job, are going to undermine you in ways, maybe not even in ways that are intentional, but you just stop getting what you need from people, mm-hmm. you know, and like it just becomes a bad place to spend time. And the thing that makes me craziest is like, you know, people above the line who, you know, like saunter in their expensive cars and, you know, get their breakfasts made for them and, you know, get their clothes brought to them. And then the rest of the people there like just drove their fucking shitty car to work and they got to get out of there early to pick up their kids. And you're the dick who's taking 45 extra minutes to eat your breakfast burrito.
Yep.
So that guy can't fucking see his kid play soccer. It's such bullshit.
And you're making more money than they are.
I mean,
and
not more money. Like all of the more money. Yeah. Like 10, 20 times more money.
And you have a chair that you get to sit down and they don't sit down all day long. Yeah. And, you know.
My chair is dope. It has like
I can't even talk about the chairs. I literally, I've seen a few fancy chairs
fancy
in
director
my
chairs.
Time. Fancy director chairs in my time. And so my chair upgrade was I went to Bed Bath & Beyond and just got like this little, like a clip that just goes on the side so I could put my soda in it.
That's
and
nice.
I was like, this is it. And I would
That's
take
nice.
It off, you know, appropriate, so it doesn't interfere with the prop department's cart.
I love you.
You know, but like that was my, you know, $5 upgrade and it does the job.
I'm my chair is never my chair. Like they just take the backs off. So like sometimes I'm like, here's the thing I left in the pocket the other day. And I'm like, sometimes here's a used condom.
Yeah.
This is not a chair, guys. I don't understand how this got
I
here.
Feel
What's
like
happening?
I should explain to people listening.
Yes,
like,
thank
chairs
you.
Are a big deal on set. Not everybody gets a chair. If you have a chair with your name on it, like, it's a big deal. The first time I saw my name on a chair, I like called my mom crying because a lot of people don't get to literally like I'm not exaggerating. People don't get to sit down all day.
The first time I saw my name on a chair, they misspelled it.
That's
I mean,
awesome.
They misspelled
That's okay.
my name.
I really hope you kept it.
Here's
I
a good did. Story. Here's a good story. So Julie Plec, who is my mentor and was my boss for a really long time. And now we work together and was Candace's boss for a really long time and is like one of our best friends. She directed my pilot, Roswell, New Mexico. And I got to work on day one of filming. And she just had this look on her face like something had gone horribly wrong. And I was like, what? And she was like, well, I sent your chair back away because they misspelled your name. This is my show. Like, it's my show.
Her name is on the cover of the script.
It's my show. My name is everywhere. And she was like, they spelled Mackenzie with an S instead of a Z. I sent it away. You don't have to see it. She's like, it's gone now. They'll bring a new one back to you. But like, I really, you guys are going to laugh. I was like really bummed about this.
Yeah.
I was like, man, thought I was important and the king
I've arrived.
My name right.
I've arrived.
Chairs,
and yet...
chairs matter.
But do you think it's like the universe saying, like, be humble, Karina.
Yeah,
sit down. Oh, wait, you can't sit down.
Apparently the universe is being
straight
like,
Kendrick Lamar. Bitch, stand there and wait.
Be humble.
And then
yeah.
I was
sit on
so
some shit
mad
that's
at
not yours.
I was so mad at myself for how bummed I was that I was like in a blank chair for like a few hours.
I get it. Like you feel like you've arrived and it's your show and it's not, it's, I mean, it's about ego the way that like everything is about ego in the world is like your feelings and shit, but it is your show. And that's a pretty basic
thing. If it makes you
thing.
Feel better, on day one of Vampire Diaries, my first day filming ever, I was told I wasn't allowed to sit in the front seat because it wasn't my show and I needed to sit in the back, towards the back of the
that
van.
That is
okay, White Rosa Parks.
Who said
I hope who you didn't move.
Have to murder dead.
It was
who am I killing?
It was a Teamster in Canada. I won't even. I have like so respect. That's, I love Teamsters. Oh, yeah, I have God. So much respect for the Teamsters. But yeah, it was what a very that's protective, passionate.
That's amazing,
gentlemen.
But like, there's another. There's like 100 ways to say it, and that was.
It was so. I just didn't know what to do. I was like, oh, like, did someone get car sick today? And he's like, no, this just isn't your show. And I was just like.
Well,
okay.
Like, who, is someone coming? Is someone going to sit in this? Or are we just going to leave it? Yeah. Is there a ghost that occupies this? Like, come on, bro.
But I think it's good. I think it's nice to have those moments. I think it is what keeps you humble throughout your career. And it's exactly what you just said, Karina. It's like you started off, you know, nervous on a set for the first time. And then now you're a boss. Like, you have your own show. You started off as...
I'm still nervous on
an
set.
An assistant writer. No.
I still feel like, am I standing in there? Is the camera... Am I in an eye line?
I get more nervous when... I mean, you know,
there's
like,
more on your shoulders.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, I think, you know, without like turning it into, you know, putting to find a point on it, I think... Like, I directed an episode of television for the first time this year, and I feel really comfortable on sets. I love being on set. Like, I love being on other people's sets. Like, I come to other people's sets, and I act like it's my set, and I like, spoil spot.
She accidentally...
I spoil plot points.
Can I please,
really thinking about it.
She took a photo of the... We were on set for the Big Arrow Flash Everything crossover last season, and she took a photo of the monitor and posted it, and it was, like, every superhero together on screen for the first
Someone
time ever.
Someone was in a wedding dress. I don't know.
And
I don't know what people
put it on her.
I mean...
she put it on her Instagram story, and I was like, oh, sorry, it's Aisha Tyler's first time on a TV set.
I had some chips, I fucking kicked it in the Video Village. It was like, it's my show. When I go to
we
set,
were
I feel
drinking.
I feel very comfortable on set. But when you walk on set and you are the person who has to answer all of the questions and you have to have an answer for everything, which I think is a false construct. So if people are listening and they're like, oh, I'm anxious about moving forward in my life because I'm afraid I'm not going to have all the answers. No one really actually has all the answers. But your anxiety is heightened when your name is the biggest name on the back of the most important chair. And a part of the creative process is discovering things as you go along, and you need to leave space for that. But what people want from you is definitive answers at every minute of the day. I think that's when the anxiety can get really kind of like foundational.
Yeah. I hope this doesn't sound like a generalized question, but do you feel the added pressure as a woman on a set? Because even just a female actor, I sometimes feel like, okay, I got to have my shit extra together
100%.
Because there's not a lot of us uteruses in there.
Mm-hmm. I do, and I'm surrounded by a lot of men. Julie is on the show with me, but other than Julie, all the executive producers are men, and Julie has another show that she's working on, so she's not around very much. So like, I'm the voice that people are listening to. And sometimes people literally are not used to listening to a woman's voice. We called it on the set of the Roswell pilot. Our DP said, Julie was like, people aren't hearing me. They're not listening to me. And our DP was like, they're not used to hearing you as like your dad voice yet, was how he put it. And what it is what how he described it. I liked that it was dad, not mom, mm-hmm. by the way. Mm-hmm. But as he described it, it was like, when you're used to listening for what your boss wants, you can pick their voice out in a crowd. Mm-hmm. Like, I could pick Julie's voice out in a crowd of a million, mm-hmm. Because I'm used to being like, oh, Julie's here. What does she need? What, like, you know, what brilliant advice is coming at me in the next 5 minutes? But the entire crew was so used to hearing a male voice as a director that they literally weren't hearing her. Mm-hmm. Like, their ears weren't trained for it. And that's how I feel sometimes, where I'm like, Hold on. I know I sound and talk like a 17-year-old girl, but I'm your boss. So shut up and let me finish my sentence. Yeah. Because I have the answer. I have the instruction, and I just need you to listen to it. So like, even just getting people to listen to me and to hear me is like hurdle number one as a woman. And then you got to convince them that you're right.
There was a study that was just in the New York Times. I think it was the New York Times or the Washington Post this week about the way that women talk now versus the way that we spoke 50 years ago. And that the movement of women into the workplace has actually changed the timbre of our voices. That women actually speak at a lower register now than we did 50 years ago.
You and I are both bosses.
To be heard.
You and I are both bosses, and we both have like deep man voices.
Dude, I'm straight testicle. it's all the way inside of me. And I mean, part of that's who I am, but part of it is, you know, we are socialized, I think, and I'm not blaming anybody. I think this is cultural. We're socialized to be like, guys, could you just, if you could, it would be great. I'm sorry, I don't want to be a dick.
Raising everything as a question.
I was on a business call today, and I was like, I don't want to be a dick, but this is my project. And they were like, you're not being a dick. This is your project. We're so used to being like, I don't want to be an asshole. I'm just trying to be. And so, and that's like woven into the fabric of every single cultural touch point that affects us as women from the time we're babies. It's something we have to like radically undo every day. But it's also woven into the way that men are socialized. And so, you know, like for me, when people weren't listening to me, like I went through a lot of different stuff. Like, how do I talk to this person to get them to hear me? If I start yelling at them, I look like I'm not disciplined and I don't have control or of the, over the set or over my feelings. And I just started pulling people aside and being like, this isn't fucking working for me, man. Which is not really a feminine way of dealing with things. But it was very effective. And I think when I was like, I can see you not fucking listening to me and this cannot continue. But, you know, for the 3 hours I had to work my way up to that conversation at home, I was like,
practicing it in the mirror. Yeah. And like,
urinating on myself. You know what I mean? Yeah.
That's how I talk to my 2.5-year-old when I'm really frustrated and I know that she's not listening to me. I go, we need to go have a private conversation.
Well, by the way, that will serve you very well in every work environment. That is the way to get
every like adult male and your 3.5-year-old daughter.
Exactly. How did you two meet?
How did we meet, Karina Adler McKenzie?
I think, well, the first time we met was, so my roommate and one of my best friends, Emily Bett Ricards, who's on Arrow, met Aisha. Aisha hosted a panel.
I hosted
an Arrow panel.
A combined
panel.
Arrow Flash. Panel for Paley Fest.
And Emily like fell madly in love with Aisha. And then Emily would come home to LA and be like, okay, I'm going to have brunch with Aisha and then I'll see you after that. And I was just like, why do I never get invited to brunch with Aisha? I was like, well, am I just not cool enough for brunch with Aisha? But I think Emily was making sure she was cool enough for brunch with Aisha before she like brought in the family.
These are ridiculous.
But the real time that we first hung out was we all went to the Golden Globes after parties a few years ago. And it was, this is such a like snobby fucking story. I hate it.
I love it. The floor is clear because it's going to be filled with dropped names. Yeah.
this year was the first year they were like you had to like get in a long line and then take a special bus to get to the hotel with the Golden Globes. And we were like, fuck that. We're not getting in this long ass line where people were waiting for like 2 hours. Very, very, very famous people waiting in line for like 2 hours.
It always looks so glamorous.
It's not glamorous.
Like Century City. They were like, park your car here 1,000 miles away and then wait for this bus. And then what happened was a bus would go by filled with people and you'd be like, oh, shucks. And then another bus would go by filled with people and you're like, okay, this is fucking bullshit.
We end up like going to the side door of the hotel where they host the Golden Globes and we're like begging a security guard to let us in. We're with Mel B, Scary Spice.
Ooh, what?
Who else? It was like the most, all of a sudden there were like Kardashians there. Mm-hmm. Like we were just like, just let us in. And
like, we have tickets. We're on.
I mean, that would be intimidating. Yeah. He almost would have to.
It didn't work. I mean, eventually,
what happened? Mel B's allegedly wife abusing crazy husband started screaming at a cop. Allegedly, and then allegedly was like really verbally abusive, and then allegedly got us into the party. And I was like, well, he was good for one thing.
Oh my gosh.
Well, we got into the party.
And then you guys became best friends.
And then,
yeah, we actually became really close. A bunch of us went to Coachella together last year, and we had all been like friendly, but we went to Coachella together and we were like, these are our people.
We had a very it was like a lot of closeness that weekend. Coachella makes friends, y'all.
None of us were like really Coachella people. Like I think we were all.
It was all my first Coachella.
I was definitely my first Coachella. Like, guys, it might have been my last Coachella.
Dirty hippies are not my thing, but whatever. Let's see how it goes.
I'm like, I go to Stagecoach. but we all became really, really close friends. And then there's a whole group of us. And everybody in our group of friends are artists. And they're people that work really, really, really hard and are just like hustling all the time. But over the last year or so, we've like really prioritized spending quality time together, whether that's like Aisha's got a film screening in Austin and I'm in Atlanta and I'm going to fly to Austin for the weekend and Jared's going to fly to Austin and we're going to like make the most of our time.
Or Emily's in a play this weekend. And
we get on
a plane
to go see each other. And it's not always easy. It's sometimes like we're literally getting on a plane to Vancouver for one night, but it's an event that's important to somebody. So we do it. And we come from such a place of privilege because we can afford to get on a plane. But
you take the time to do it.
Yeah.
And that's something we were so impressed with is the people that usually I would come across with who are incredibly busy don't have a social life at all. And so it was refreshing to see that you guys are involved in each other's lives, supportive of each other's lives, very hardworking, and still know how to enjoy all the hard work.
Well, it's interesting, actually, like, trying to kind of translate what feels pretty rarefied to, like, what people are listening, who are listening, might be able to, like, incorporate into their own lives. Like, the upshot of all of this is that we were, and it's magical. It's not like we kind of architected it. That's not a word, but you know what I'm saying. Drafted it. Yeah. That we found people who are all, we all admire each other, and we all do something different. You know, we're in the same business, but we're all a little different. But one thing we all remark on when we're talking about it is, like, we come to each other for advice. We ask each other about what our work lives are like. We want to hear from each other what their art, the other person's creative opinions are about the work we're doing. And it's a very honest group, and it's a very supportive group. And what I have found is that this group of friends has made me a better artist. It's made me better at my job. And I think a lot of times when you're friends with someone and maybe you're not in the same line of work, you just don't really ever ask them, like, real probing questions about how they're doing. I'm like, hey, no, I'm fine. But you're like, what's going on in your life? What are you know, or I'm going through this challenge, like, what would you do? Maybe we feel like we're going to burden our friends with these questions, but, like, I have something I'm working on at work, and I was, like, really struggling with it. And I was, like, in the car with Jared the other night, and I was just like, look, I have to do this thing at work, and, like, tell me what you think. Mm-hmm. And he just gave me, like, his honest, open opinion. And I just think, like, I'm really lucky. These people are super fun to party with. But what the core of the group is, like, people who are supportive of each other's endeavors and are willing to actually put energy into making each other better and are getting the same energy back.
Yeah.
You don't have to get on a plane to do that. You know what I mean? Like, you can do that for your friends in a meaningful way and
by the way,
not be threatened by them.
I don't think that it's a coincidence that, like, I've been close to these people for a year-ish, and it's been the best year of my life professionally, because I think that having people who, one, I know I can be like, guys, I cannot come to dinner. I have to go do this work.
Then
thing.
We harangue her for an hour. We're not supportive. Like, we call her a party pooper. I throw, like, a burning bag of poop at her.
You call me a party pooper. You call me terrible things.
I call her way worse things than that, actually.
But the thing is like, these are people who know what it's like to have to skip the fun and work. And they give me shit in jest, but, like, I have no feeling that, like, I might lose a piece of this friendship, or, like, they might have so much fun without me that they forget to invite me to the next thing, which is how I have always spent my life, worrying about, like, trying to keep friends. I don't have to worry about that anymore. I feel like I have an unbelievable safety net of people that have my back no matter what. And it's a very weird and overwhelming feeling. Mm-hmm. I was at Upfronts this year, and it was, I mean, I've done Upfronts as a journalist and stood on the red carpet.
Upfronts, everybody out there, is when all the networks announce the lineups for their fall season. And the reason they call it Upfronts is because they try to sell a lot of advertising up front. And they get big commitments from advertisers, and it's the way that they kind of pay their bills for the year. And they sell, like, a bulk advertising at a discount. Upfront sound very sexy, but they're just like, we got a bag of ads. Come on, get your advertising.
It's a big event that just is sort of like the big launch of the show from my perspective. And
it's a big deal. It's a big event. Yeah.
This is my first show, and I'm there with the cast, and I'm like, trying to be a leader, but I'm also freaking out.
Because there's a lot of big parties. All the executives are there.
All the executives are there. There's fans outside in the street. It's really crazy. And I was very nervous. And Stephen, who has done this a million times and is the fucking king of the CW.
Stephen Amell.
Stephen Amell, who's the king of the CW. Sorry, Jared and Jensen.
Duke
so
and
much
other
trouble.
Duke.
There's no way that I'm not in trouble.
Duke and Duchess. Duke and Duchess.
He's one of our best friends. And that guy was glue at my side all weekend and was just like, made sure I met the right people, made sure I went to the right things, made sure, you know, they're like, oh, she's not talent. She doesn't need to be backstage. And he's like, oh, yes, she is. And oh, yes, she does. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having somebody who's been through it before was so valuable to me. I mean, the level of anxiety that went away was unbelievable. And, like, you know, we're working on making movies together. Right. We're working on, like, weird indie stuff that we're going to do together. We've got plans. All of us are going on vacation together for Christmas. Like, it really is a chosen family more than I've ever had one before.
But, like, also just quickly, like, the thing I like about Stephen doing all those things for you that I think, again, is, like, applicable to people out there is, like, and I just called someone who's a showrunner to ask them for some advice. And I was like, I know you're super busy, but I'm working on a project and it's, like, in your space, and I would just love to get your advice. And he's like, I got to tell you something. People just rarely ask me for advice because they think that I'm super busy. And I'm just, people did this for me when I was younger and I'm dying to do this for somebody.
Oh, wow.
So we had like this 90-minute breakfast that I just like inside was like plotting because I love this guy and he's amazing and brilliant. And I was like, I can't believe I'm getting all this time with him. And then what I was, what he was saying was like, you don't realize. And what you, what I was just hearing from you is like, people don't realize like when that, like being like generous of, and this is a greeting card, like being generous of spirit is like so, it like pays you so much harder than it pays the person you're being generous to. Like for him, he's like, it's so great to be talking about these things. Like you're helping me reorganize the way that I see my own job. You're helping me see things about what I do and what you're doing that like I wasn't really pondering because I was just too busy with, like with my head down trying to get my job done. And so like, you know, like without like saying, hey, go pick a mentor, but like being generous with someone else, like when you're talking with someone else is always like wildly rewarding. So like Stephen got as much out of like doing those things for you. And I don't mean in a crass way, just he's a generous, he's a generous guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it's just, there's something really groovy about being able to say, hey, I learned all this stuff and now I'm super excited to share it with you because I remember what it felt like to be terrified at this thing.
So, so far I'm getting surround yourself with a great group of people that inspire you and support you even if you can't make it. Mm-hmm. And then also, find a mentor.
Find a mentor or be a mentor. And dump people who don't add value. I know that sounds really mean.
No, that's...
And I know it sounds like, well, I'm not saying like if your friend can get into a nice restaurant, dump them. I'm saying when you have people who like
but
make
also...
you feel depleted when they're gone, when like they always need something from you and they never can give. You know, some people are, make you elated to be around them and then you realize that they're kind of like soul sucking. But if they make you elated, then they added value. You know what I mean? Like elation being around someone can be value.
My issue is that I just hide in. Like it, at the upfronts, my goal is not to, which it should be, I should be out there saying hello and putting myself out there and being open to opportunity. And instead, I'm like, I just want to sit in the corner. I don't, I'm very nervous to look anyone in the eye. I'm going to say something wrong. I'm going to forget that person's name. I'm going to like, they're going to ask me a question and I'm going to not have anything interesting to say. I'm going to offend someone. Which is can really hold you back in a career,
everybody's,
I'm assuming.
I think that's everybody's inner monologue all the time. I feel that way totally.
So
fight the inner monologue. Yeah,
every time I speak at one of those things, my brain is going, why did you say that? Shut up, Karina. Like, they don't want to hear your dumb joke. But it's I always interject with the dumb joke.
I always do. They're super dumb.
You kind of have to put on that like Wonder Woman like persona of like, I got this, you know, right? Like this battle armor into it? Or no, am I just
you can't get return without output. You just can't. You know what I mean? You just can't.
Well,
there's like no risk, no reward. So like, you know, I've been in that CW room. I mean, that specific room, you know, where it's like everybody's super hot and fancy and you're like, oh, my outfit's not as cool as that. Yeah.
It's like my high school nightmare.
Yeah, and it happens like every year. And like, is this the year that this doesn't make me feel like shit? But maybe like the alternative is just like, fuck, I have to be here. I might as well get something out of it. Maybe I do offend somebody. Maybe they don't like my outfit. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
These people are not my, there's not my, they're not my friends or not my family. I mean, in the way of like if it goes great, great. If it doesn't go great, like I haven't lost anything. You know what I mean?
I have a story that leads to some like some pretty good advice, I think. The first time that I ever interviewed somebody as a journalist, it was Kevin Williamson. And anybody who has ever met me knows that I'm like the biggest Dawson's Creek fan ever in the world. I learned that television writing was a thing by watching an interview he did when I was like 11.
For those who don't know, Kevin
Pacey.
Kevin Williamson wrote Dawson's Creek. He wrote the Scream movies. He wrote a little show called The Vampire Diaries.
Oh, yeah. And many other awesome hits.
A million other things. But my first ever interview was with him. And my mom gave me advice beforehand. It was just a phone interview. It was like, now I look back on it, I think it was like a 10-minute phoner for the CW. And now I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe that I like prepared for this for weeks ahead. But my mom gave me advice. She said, if you're nervous, say it out loud. So the first thing that I said on this interview was like, you got to forgive me if I'm stuttery and nervous because I'm a huge fan and I'm nervous. And then the nerves just went away. Yeah. And I've taken that to heart for my entire career. So even now when I sit down, I'm the boss in the room. I don't need to remind anybody that I'm the boss in the room. Usually, sometimes I do. But like, I sit down and I'm like, look, this is my first time at bat. I'm going to have a lot of questions. I'm going to have some answers, but I'm going to have a lot of questions. feel free to ask me your questions, but I know that I don't know everything. So I go into it saying, look, I'm at a disadvantage here. I'm a little nervous. Go into the upfronts thing being like, this is my first time. It's crazy that I'm in this room. And I'll say that out loud to whoever is listening. And then it takes the pressure off a little bit, because you're just like, I just said out loud that I don't feel like I belong here. So nobody expects me to look like I belong here. So when I do make a good joke and people think it's funny and cool, they're like, oh, okay.
That's what I was going to say. You know? Even admitting that makes you endearing as mm-hmm. the listener. And then instantly we're all rooting for you.
Mm-hmm. I just want to present myself as an underdog all the time.
That's great. Everyone
else is just freeze you low. From trying to be cool. Like you immediately are like, okay, I don't have to try to be cool anymore.
It's impossible. Cool. It's impossible to feel cool in a room full of people who have been doing whatever it is that you do a lot longer than you, and who have been doing it for in a different way, you know, in front of a camera. People mm-hmm. who are used to being in front of a camera, to me, I'm like, I'm terrified. I hate that there's a camera on me.
So own who you are.
Own who you
and
are.
Say it aloud, even if it helps.
And also, don't be afraid. This is another thing. Don't be afraid to be excited when you're excited. I think sometimes people are trying so hard to be cool mm-hmm. and so hard not to look around that they like forget to be grateful and forget to
be present.
Be stoked about what's happening. Yeah. Regardless,
it's like
of,
a joyless way of working.
Regardless of where you are or what your thing is, like when you achieve the little goal that you were looking to achieve this time, it doesn't have to be the huge thing. It can just be like, I got through that meeting. Okay. I'm excited. I walked in the door to Candace's house today and I was like, I just came from a pitch. I think I nailed it. Where's the wine? Yeah. I'm stoked. because, you know, you don't nail a pitch every day and you should be able to have some rosé with your friends when you do.
Agreed.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
What was this thematic thing that we were supposed to be circling?
It really rooted actually from something that you told me about a week or 2 weeks ago at like 2:30 in the morning.
So late at night. We were like so connected. It was really great.
We were all at Julie Plec's birthday party, which was like a teen prom themed.
Which is the best theme, by the way.
We had so much fun.
On my Instagram feed, there was a balloon cloud, which I need in my room. Like I need it in my bedroom now. It was so great.
There are Polaroid photos of Kayla and her husband making out under the bleachers that are my literal favorite thing
thanks
ever.
Thanks to Colton. Because he was the one.
Colton will take a picture of you on the toilet. Like you have to always be looking for Colton.
He took it so seriously and was such a creative director and was like, no, get under the bleachers and I'm going to shoot it like this. And we were like, okay. And then he shows it to us. I'm like, that's one of my favorite photos I've ever taken.
It was so cute.
It's the best.
It was so much fun. We were sitting by the pool and Aisha, you told me you have no idea what's going to happen in your life. You have no idea what could possibly happen in your life. You don't know what's going to happen next.
Nobody does.
And it just brought me back to that feeling that I don't know how I lost it along the way of thinking that I was supposed to know and thinking that I should have it figured out. And I, for some reason, have the ability to control it and started reframing my way of thinking of, you work towards goals, but you have to be open to whatever life is going to give you. And it just really smacked me in the head and made me realize, like, I've been focusing on all the things that I'm trying to force to happen and that I expect to happen. And I'm not even being open to what I couldn't even imagine could happen.
Right. I'm so glad that affected you, because I feel like I do feel like when I was in my 20s, I had that same idea. I was like, you have to have a plan, you execute the plan, and then this happens. And then, especially in this business where, it's like it's a Sisyphean gig, right? Like you roll the rock up the hill and then something happens and you are slide right back to where you were before. And that can just happen over and over again your whole career, versus any other business where you kind of just, you execute and you get promoted and that when I let that go, it was very freeing, because paired with that thing of like, I need to figure this out, is this anxiety that there's something wrong with you that you haven't figured it out. And that can really be crippling. So then I just was like, I have no idea what's going to happen. And that should be interesting to me. It should be really interesting that I don't know what's going to happen. And again, I can work towards goals, but I have to be open to the fact that I might need to pivot and that the pivot might be more interesting than the plan.
And speaking of, I feel like you have pivoted so many times in your life, or is it just that you've always worn so many hats?
No, I mean, where I am now is not at all where I set out to be. And I used to talk a lot on my own podcast about the idea of moving the goalposts. Like you need to continuously be moving the goalposts and reassessing your values. And sometimes you're moving them forward and sometimes you're moving them in a different direction. But when I graduated from college, I wanted to be a lawyer. And then
good job.
Yeah, super fun job. Good time, super good time. And then, started doing stand-up as a hobby, and then just wanted to be a working stand-up. Didn't want to be on TV. And then, got a TV job and then was like, this is all I need. I don't want to be an actor. And then I got an acting job. And it wasn't like I fell into it. It wasn't like I got discovered on the couch at my buddy's house, it was like every time something interesting happened and I pursued it, lots of times it didn't go my way. And then when it did, I think I said something like, you get this kind of asymmetrical, ever expanding set of skills that expose you to new opportunities. I could not have been a director at 25. Do you know what I mean? And I didn't want to, but I couldn't have been even if I wanted to. Experiences I had since then made me more open to thinking, wow, I want to direct. And then I started to pursue that and, in large ways. And then as I learned more, then it became something that was available to me. And so I think we have this really linear way of thinking, like you go to school for this and then you do this job and then you go here, whatever it is, whether it's creative or not. But I really like polymathy. I like asymmetry. I like, what can I do? Let me see. Well, I did that. I sucked at that. Fuck that shit. Oh, hey, I'm kind of good at this. Wouldn't it be great if I spent more time developing this skill set? And, I don't know. I mean, Karina, you always loved TV, but you were a different kind of writer. And then loving these shows and then learning about these shows and then thinking, with stand-up, I remember I saw Richard Pryor live in the Sunset Strip. I was like, okay, comedians just fall out of the sky, man. This is not a fucking job, because that guy's an alien. There's nobody like that guy. I could never even think of being like that guy. But then starting to do stand-up and getting exposed to other comics, all of a sudden I was like, well, I can never be him, but I can be my own version of that. But that's just something that comes with time. Yeah. And
when I think time is the thing that I have to sort of like set aside as far as when I get super anxious and I feel like I'm not achieving what I want to. The thing is like, I think I set moving the goalpost and being like, okay, that's the next thing I want, but not putting a timer on it is what I'm kind of working on. I mean, I moved to LA 10 years ago. And when I moved to LA 10 years ago, I was like, if I'm not working on a TV show in 5 years, I'm out.
I'm going and to that, die.
I'm gonna, well, I don't love LA. So like, then I was like, okay, I'm not going to stay in LA. I'll go live somewhere I like if I'm not doing what I want. And it was like almost 5 years. Like it was almost to the day that Julie called me and was like, hey, do you want to be writer's assistant?
I mean, really, how dare you?
But listen, when I said I want to be working on a TV show in 5 years, I did not mean getting people's coffee. That wasn't what I was thinking. So I'm at that point where I'm like, do I want to throw this whole journalism career that I've built that I'm pretty good at and that I like away to start from square one, getting people's coffee? Is that who I am at 26, at 27? Because in my mind, 26 and 27 was like, I'm basically dying. Like, my world is ending. I'm old.
When you're
like,
in your young 20s, 30s sounds so old.
I remember thinking all the time, Josh Schwartz had his own show by the time he was 25.
Oh my
gosh. And
like,
the OC lasted like 5 minutes. It was great for like 2 seasons. It was like, he wasn't fantastic at it right out of the gate. Now he's fantastic at it. But like, it's not like I set these timers for myself. My mom was visiting literally last night and I'm driving in the car with my mom crying. And I'm like, I feel like I just wasted a year and a half of my life on this guy. And it's not. And she was like, Karina, you're 31. Like, you have. And I'm not like in a rush to have babies or anything. So it was just like, oh, yeah, I did waste a little time, but I'm not out of time.
Also, by the way, without mentioning who this boy is, there were broad swaths of time where you were just getting laid and having a great time. So you weren't wasting anything. I'm sorry. You were just drinking whiskey and boning. I think that's a pretty good year and a half.
Okay. Let's
perspective.
Moving forward. Anyway, what I'm saying is I look at chunks of time and think about things that I thought I was going to have achieved by then. Like, by the time my mom was my age, she had 2 kids. She had another one on the way. She was married. She was living in a house in Connecticut. Like, and I look at that and then I'm like, I feel like she was so far ahead of me. But none of those things are things I want.
Exactly.
So it's like a very hard, you know, thing to take a look at and be like, oh, like, I've achieved a lot of things that my mom didn't achieve by the time she was 31. And when I set the next goalpost, right now I'm just real focused on like not fucking up what I have right now. That's my goal, is like, I'm holding. I feel like I'm like doing the egg drop in high school where you're like,
oh, yeah.
I've got this little baby egg that I'm supposed to take care of and not drop. And that's what my TV show feels like, is like, it's mine. Don't fuck it up. And that's my big goal in life right now. But like, as I do set goalposts for myself moving forward, I'm not going to put a timer on it, because that's when life passes you by. Like, I had the best year of my life with the best friends I've ever made and had so much fun and said yes to things and went on a million insane adventures, because I wasn't like, oh, but if I haven't gotten this thing done by this time, then I'm going to have failed at it. You know, like, to having not achieved something by the time you're 30, like, we're not done yet, dude.
Anyway,
it's also like that comparison trap. You can't compare your life to your mom's or to a friend's or to anyone's, because despair.
I mean, you can compare it to your ex-boyfriend's new girlfriend.
No, you can't.
Only
privately. No, you can't. Because you're doing a lot better. Okay, good.
Yeah,
okay,
that's a good reason. Yeah.
But like, seriously, like when I say moving goalposts, or when you're talking about benchmarks, like, they need to be yours. They need to be your benchmarks. Like, they can't be like these weird societal, like, I should be married and have a house. Like, I owned a house for 15 years. It was very nice in a very nice neighborhood. I had a fancy car. I had a fancy place. And one day I woke up and I was like, I don't want any of this stuff. I don't want my stuff. And I got rid of all my stuff. I own like 15% of what I owned 5 years ago. And I'm so much happier now. And a lot of people be like, oh my God, you're so old. Why don't you have a bunch of stuff? Where's all your stuff? Like, I live in a one-bedroom apartment. And people are like, when are you going to move to a real house? I'm like, I had a real house. It wasn't interesting to me.
I wanted to have a real house so I can sleep there.
You can sleep on my couch anytime you want.
I'm going to sleep in your bed.
I got TV dinners for days, yo. But like, the idea that like, you feel anxious because you don't have the stuff that society is telling you should have, like, you have to destroy that. It's like meaningless.
I hate the idea that I feel like I get so caught up in other people being like, oh my gosh, I'm just so busy. I'm so busy. I can't even sleep. I'm so busy. I'm so busy. I'm like, I guess I should be so busy. Like, actually, I don't want to be that busy. And I've said no to things.
Yeah, like,
and
reject that total bullshit standard.
I spent my time on hiatus traveling.
I'm
like,
so jealous.
Instead of, like, coming to LA. And and some people can be like, oh, wow, that was, you know, missed opportunities. But to me, it just filled my soul and made me feel more interesting.
Dude, I'm salivating when I hear you talk about that. I would love to spend a hiatus just traveling. I'm so jealous.
I want to go back to school. Like, I talk about that all the time. Like, when can I take a semester? Because my old boss, Mike Narducci, who's this really, really great guy, I always call him Coach Taylor. He had this thing where he would be like, go home this weekend and refuel. Basically, like, your input influences your output. And I forget that sometimes. Like, sometimes you need to take a weekend and read a bunch of books or, like, you know, learn about something you've never learned about and enrich yourself. Remind yourself of how good it feels to learn and to absorb and to take things in. And then the output comes a lot easier. Because I think as artists, particularly, we feel like we're supposed to keep putting things out. Even now, I'm like, I've got this show and I'm like, every minute I have a break, I'm either going, literally this weekend on my way to, I went to Santa Fe to scout for my show. And at the beginning of the flight, this is a 2-hour flight. It's not a long flight. The beginning of the flight, they announced there's no Wi-Fi. So the work that I had planned to do on the plane, I couldn't do. I had a book in my bag and I literally was like having an anxiety attack because I was like, I don't have 2 hours to just sit here and read. I should have been doing this work. No, take your 2 hours and like relax and read the book. Mm-hmm. And I got so frustrated with myself later because I was like, why didn't I just like instead? I literally like angsted for 2 hours about the work that I should have been doing. And then I'm never going to finish that book. That book's going to sit there forever. And you have to stop and absorb. And that's not just like reading and watching things and learning. It's like spending time with family, sitting at a cafe somewhere new and watching people. And I think that we forget about that because we feel like we're in a race all the time.
Well, it does feel like a race. Yeah. And it's hard not to compare to others and be like, okay, they're doing this and they only need 8 hours of sleep. So I should wake up earlier and only need 6 hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. And then, it's a whole thing.
And the thing about so busy, it's specific to this business, but it's not unique to this business. Do you know what I'm saying? Like in the entertainment business, that's like a mantra. Oh my God, I'm so busy, I'm so slammed. But people get that everywhere. I mean, people hear that all over, you know. And
I think it's a city thing too. I think it's I'm in New York, I'm in LA, I'm supposed to be running from one thing to the next thing all of the time. And like,
it's not a European thing, that's for sure.
No. I was just in Europe and I was like, just so, and I always love it there. I'm like, can I just sit here and like wear out this bottle of wine and like wear out this one bowl of French fries that I've been eating for 4 hours? You know, it's just, we don't do a good job here. But Karina, you said the best thing, which is input affects output. You cannot, especially as an actor, you cannot play human beings if you are not a human being. You've got to have experiences.
Anybody who's ever met me like laughs when I say this, but I'm a total introvert in that I love people. I love being around people. I'm super social. I refuel when I'm alone. Mm-hmm. So like we went to the Kentucky Derby this year and at the end, we got home and all of our friends were like, let's go to this bar. Just like one last drink before the weekend's over. The sun's still up. And I was like, everyone get away from me.
Yeah, we really worked on you too.
I was like, this car is taking me home. I don't care where it drops you off along the way, but this car is taking me home.
This was a real point of contention.
I'm so happy to hear you say that.
Breaking up the band.
It's the closest we've ever, but my friends, we love each other and my friends are extroverted. My friends like gain their fire from being in a big group. And I love being in that group, but I refuel alone in my room.
That's a medical. That's not like, she's not talking about herself like it's her idea. Like introverts fill their batteries being alone. Extroverts fill their batteries being with other people. And I'm an extrovert and I'm like a clinical extrovert. So I love being alone. I actually really, really like being alone. I can be alone for days at a time. I don't mind silence. I love to read. However, I will get slowly depressed over time. And then what makes me better is being around other people.
I'm the opposite way.
Yeah.
It's important to
people
know.
People depress me.
I think it's important to know yourself enough to know how to refuel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also to understand that maybe your way of refueling is not, again, this societal standard way of refueling.
Mm-hmm. But thank goodness that you guys have each other and know each other well enough. That you guys that can was be the closest we ever got together. To
a fight.
Though.
That was we almost got a fight.
I was like, "You should get out of the
I
car.
I needed you so
get
badly.
Out
I,
of the
it
car.
Was really painful for me to lose one of us, and I really was having a hard time. I was like, our synchronized swimming routine is not going to work if there is an odd number of us here. This is not okay for me.
It's funny too because like our group, we're just like deeply codependent. Like the FOMO is real. Like, but and it's not like I'm afraid of missing out because I'm afraid you're going to forget about me or like love me less. It's just like I know you're having a
don't
great
have fun
time.
Without me. You guys are not allowed to have any fun without me.
It's really terrible.
But I will say like I don't want it to sound like we're gloating. Like I feel super fortunate. And one of the things that we do that I feel is like really lovely and again, I'm missing like a greeting card is like everybody does a lot of like, this is really gross.
It is gross. Everyone, I know
really
what you're gonna
gritty.
Say.
It's really everyone does like a lot of like I like we're telling people each other we love each other like all the time, sometimes like multiple times in one encounter, like we'll be together and on a night, like everyone will just go around me like, I just need you to know how much I love you, how much I admire you. Like,
and this
really
is like not
like adults.
This
none of us
like
are fucking. You know what I mean? Not relationships, just friends.
And, this isn't like, I mean, sometimes it is, but it's not like drunk, like, I love you so much in a bathroom. You know what I mean? Like,
it's like crazy grip your face and like deep eye contact. I love you. Yeah. It's like weird, makes you uncomfortable. I
and
love
like,
you. Yeah.
I wake up to like long text messages from people that are like, my life has been changed because of you people. And then I send one that's also like, guys, I feel like my entire, like, I genuinely feel like I achieved what I achieved this year. And this was a really big year for me work-wise. It was hard. It was, there were a lot of tears. There was a lot of stress. But I climbed the ladder so hard. And I genuinely think it's because I had a safety net behind me that like made me feel like I could do anything. Mm-hmm. Like I could take any risk. I could walk into this. I mean, I walked into a meeting about Roswell and it was a teen supernatural drama that was on in 1999. The CW is like, we want to remake Roswell. Karina, come in and pitch us your idea. And I walk in with a show about 30-year-old cowboys in the under the Trump administration with a lead that's the daughter of an illegal immigrant. And I'm like, oh, and also aliens. And it was a huge risk. I was rolling the dice big time. And I felt like, well, you know what? And this was on a Friday. The next day, I was going to Palm Springs, or that night, actually, I was driving to Palm Springs for our friend Cass's birthday. And I literally thought to myself, this is going to go terribly, but I'm going to have an awesome weekend with my friends. Uh-huh, so it's going to be fine. And I went in there and I pitched the craziest version of this show ever. And they bought it at the table. They were like, they didn't go away to talk about it. They were like, okay, we're doing this. How do we do this? When do we start?
Wow.
And I don't think I would have done that had I not been like, I have the wind in my sails. I have like, I really had the wind at my back because of all of my friends. Nobody was going to let me fall that hard, you know?
And I think like one of the things that I love about the way that we all interact, and I think again, like for people who are listening, like it doesn't make you weaker, like tell someone you care about them. Like I think sometimes people do it. They don't do it because they feel vulnerable and they're afraid of being vulnerable. And we all have friends who like don't give us the love that we need. Like I've had friends in my life. I'm always talking about like, you know, cutting people who don't add value. Like I have friends who like I really love them. You know, I love being around them. I think they're amazing. And they're just not able to be the kind of friend to me that I need. It doesn't make me angry. But there was one friend I had for a long time who I just thought like, this person's never gonna do what I need them to do, but it's making me feel like I'm stupid or gullible that I love them in a way that they don't love me back.
Oof, you're speaking to me right now. My heart is hurting.
I really struggled because I really love this person and I needed them to like be better. And I just had to realize they were never gonna be better. They were never gonna be the friend I needed to be. But I also had to stop like devaluing my own feelings. Like my feelings are my own. They're my feelings. So I love you. And I'm not going to go like, well, you're stupid to love this person because they're never going to be what you need them to be. Why are you so dumb and gullible? Your feelings are yours. So I just loved this person. I stopped interacting with them as much because it was like hurting my feelings, but I stopped beating myself up. And so I guess my point is like, if you love someone, like expressing it freely is just like incredibly like it's like getting in, I don't know, it's like spinning around like fucking, you know, like Wonder Woman. Like, it makes you stronger.
And you can have healthy boundaries that protect your soul while still also caring for someone else.
Yeah, like saying I love you and also saying to yourself, I need to protect myself. Like, those aren't mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
So like, you know, like, I just think like a free expression of how you feel about someone, like if there's somebody you care about, like, you know, not even just in a relationship, friends, people say like, I really care about you, you make my life better, or you've done this for me, or you've affected me in this way. It doesn't really matter how they respond, because that's not up to you, and it's not a quid pro quo.
Yeah.
You know, like if you say it and then it's off your chest and it makes you feel good and present and whole, and then whatever they give back to you, that's their responsibility, man. Like, it doesn't have anything to do with you, and maybe they're going to come back at you in a great way, maybe they're not. But you just get to live and you get to be present on the planet in a full way.
Which also goes back to like being in a party where you feel uncomfortable and being like, you know what, guys, I'm just feeling nervous here.
Right.
And this is just who I am. And I'm putting it out there, heart open, and whatever you guys have to say back,
it doesn't matter.
And
like, I don't remember, just so you know, I never remember anyone's name ever. All the time. I called someone I know very well the other day the wrong name. We spent hundreds of hours of social time together. I walked by a table together. I was going to brunch and this guy's like, hey, Aisha. And I was like, hey. And I was literally like, have we met? I don't remember. And he's like this many times. And I was like, so essentially I'm a dick.
Yeah.
Just know that like, I can't remember anything ever. And it's just not my strong suit. And I'm super sorry. I could go around being like, oh, I'm so stupid. Or I could just be like, I'm not good at it. And so I'm just going to say bad things and be a big dummy. That's my jam.
Also spilling wine
on your couch.
On your white couch
is also my jam. But I'm just wiping up in my sweatpants right now.
I love how much you guys own who you are.
That's what happens when you get old. Yeah. Y'all.
I am fresh as a daisy. Go fuck yourself. I am still working on it, but I honestly have. That's really like been the thing. I mean, when I think about how long Candace and I have known each other, it's been almost, it's probably 9 years now we've known each other.
Oh my God,
and I look
amazing.
Back at how nervous I was at all those early interactions, just like wanting to seem cool enough and wanting to not be the person who people are like, well, what? Who let her in? And I think we all were feeling like that at that time. And we all looked at ourselves and we were all like, am I cool enough to be in this room? And I don't feel that way anymore. I just decided to be like, if I was invited into the room, it's because I'm supposed to be in the room. And it doesn't mean that I have to be the same kind of cool as everybody else in the room. And it doesn't mean that I have to have things figured out as everybody else in the room. I also spent a lot of my childhood and my adolescence feeling like I took up too much space, like emotionally and physically, and just like, I have a loud voice. People were always telling me I was very loud when I was a kid, and I stopped talking.
You're a fucking delight.
I stopped talking for a really long time. I started feeling like everything I said wasn't supposed to be said.
You feel also like being tall? Because I remember I was always taller than a lot of my friends.
I literally physically felt like I took up space.
A lot of hunching. Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
And wow.
I stood up straight like a year ago.
Yeah.
That's just happening now.
Yeah. But now I'm just like, fuck. One, I have Aisha, so I have a tall friend to stand next to, which is great.
She's got a much bigger, she's got like a totem pole
now.
Are
you wearing heels? Nope.
Exactly. Lightning's hitting me first. So, yeah.
But I really, I've stopped feeling like my space doesn't belong to me. And I still have to remind myself of that sometimes. I think that there are, but it's not about me now. It's about sometimes other people make me feel like I'm taking up too much space. And I have to acknowledge that that's their problem.
That's their shit.
And they can go.
Do you have advice for our listeners who are also going through that, of something that you've done that helps when you're in those situations?
I don't really know. It was just such a long process. Like, and I think that not expecting yourself to feel great about everything all of the time, owning your nervousness, not being afraid to be asking the question. Like, I never pretend I know something that I don't know. Mm-hmm. I make a point in, you know, all these meetings I'm sitting around with like 6-year-old dudes who have been doing this stuff forever. And I'm like, there's going to be stuff that I don't know. I'll ask. But when I am sure, I'm sure. I don't pretend that I know the answer if I don't. But when I give you an answer, that's my answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think finding people who really love you, and I'm talking about friends, but I'm also talking about mentors. Like, Julie Plec turned me into the person that I am today. She found me as this like scared kid who I can't even recognize that girl when I think about my first dinner with her, and how nervous I was and how I was just like talking and talking and talking. And couldn't believe that she'd invited me to, we went to like Katsuya in Hollywood and Kevin Williamson stopped by, just stopped by. And I was like blown away. And I'm sitting at this dinner being like, shit, I can't even split the bill because I will overdraft my bank account. Like that was like where I was in life. And at the end of the dinner, she said to me, you know, you should be a storyteller. And I was a journalist, you know, and I was writing like little interviews with people like Candace and, you know, and I was loving it. I was so happy. I wasn't telling my story. I was telling somebody else's story. And she just said, you should be a storyteller. And that was moment one. That was the first time when I was like, oh, there's a space that I'm supposed to occupy. And finding that was what changed it. And I really look back on that girl and I do not recognize her. But it wasn't like in a day I learned how. I just slowly had to become more comfortable with myself. I wish I had some kind of magic advice, but my advice is the same as Aisha said. I think cut people out that make you feel like you're invading a space that doesn't belong to you when it does belong to you. Mm-hmm. And figure out what space is yours, you know? And that doesn't mean you have to have achieved all of your things. Like, I figured out that I wanted to tell stories long before I got my hands on, a seat in a writer's room. Mm-hmm. But as an artist and as a creator, you can make art and create art however your soul feel right. And so I was like, okay, I'm a writer and mm-hmm. I'm going to be a writer. And
then start writing.
Start
writing. Like, don't wait for permission from other people to be an artist. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's something that, you know, we do culturally. I think women especially do it. Like, well, you know, if you want to be a writer, just start writing. If you want to be a painter, just start painting. I mean, like, you can make art and you'll find that actually 90% of it will be satisfying to you without anybody ever seeing it. Like, you have to be invested in you. And the other piece of advice that I give all the time, and I wrote a whole book about it, was like, don't be afraid to fail. Like, I know that sounds like another greeting card saying, but I feel like the number of people have come up to me and they're like, I want to be a comic, but I'm afraid I'm going to fail. Or be a writer, I'm afraid I'm going to fail. I'm like, well, you are. You're going to fail. Mm-hmm. Because everybody fails. Everybody fails and they fail repeatedly. And in fact, you cannot get any better without failure. Nobody does something great and thinks like, I've got to improve. You know, like, fucking follow that bitch's shots. You know what I mean? Like, failure is what makes you grow. It makes you creatively tough, makes you resilient. And also fear of failure is why people never start. Yeah. So you have to start. And stipulate to the fact that it's probably not going to go your way, and then it's not going to go your way, and then it's not going to go your way, and then it is going to go your way. And success is not the absence of failure. It's persistence, constant persistence through failure. And that failure is really what shows you what your strengths are. And the more times you kind of fall down, the more you realize that falling down is not going to kill you. Because, you know, the first time you think, like, what if I embarrass myself? What if everybody knows? Am I going to die? And then you don't die.
And the world keeps
and
turning.
And you keep getting up in the morning and they're like, oh, that wasn't that bad. And I don't really give a shit what that guy thought anyway.
Yeah.
You know? I think, and I say this, like, this is a weird story to say out loud, but I'm saying it because I think that, like, people can look at our Instagrams and think that we're, like, living this awesome life all of the time and that everything's great all of the time and that...
I had pink eye. I just got over pink eye. I had pink eye for 10
France?
Days. Just cleared up. No. I went on a trip to France. I immediately got pink eye. Who wants to have sex with me? Come on. Get at this. Yeah. I mean, crazy.
Oh, my God.
Eye swollen, can't see pink eye. So,
oh
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Living that dream.
Last night, I was telling my mom a story about a friend that I was got into a fight with recently, and
was
I
it me
said,
because I wanted you to come drink,
probably. And I said, and I this came out of my mouth before I really heard it, and then I was like, Jesus Christ! I said, he made me feel ugly, and I was like, fuck! I can't believe that I would let somebody else make me feel that way, because I didn't say I was ugly. I said, he made me feel ugly, and that's on him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think that, like, that's the thing that I've learned over the course of a very, very long struggle with, like, feeling good about myself and feeling good in my skin and feeling good with the sound of my voice and the way that I talk is, like, I'm not ugly. He made me feel ugly because he feels ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and I was proud of myself for phrasing it that way, but it took me a long time. As a kid, I definitely would have been like, but I'm ugly. Mm-hmm. And it was, Yeah, I thought about it. Like, it was so good to have my mom here, you guys. Like, these like long conversations with my mom. We went to a Rod Stewart and Cyndi Lauper concert, and I'm literally like sitting and I'm literally talking to her about all this stuff, like while like old people are dancing around us. Like,
she's like,
so
my song is on. I don't know why you brought me here if you don't want to actually watch the concert.
Forever Young is playing, and my mom's like, okay, okay. But like, I had to, you have to sort of do that thing. That's like, what's on them and what's on me?
Yeah. Also, because, why am I giving this other person any real estate?
Yeah, so much any real estate.
Yeah. And because you're sort of like, you have to realize what's coming from outside your people. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't my people. Mm-hmm. Like, because my people don't make me feel ugly.
My people would never
make
me feel
this way. My people send me long text messages about how much they miss my face.
Mm-hmm. Like, I love all these wonderful stories about how you guys support each other emotionally, creatively. I mean, I thought we were just going to be talking about, and then you set these goals, and then these are the things you work to do it. And I love that it turned into a big love fest of that really is what feeds the soul and can ultimately drive creativity, regardless of what industry you're in. Mm-hmm. Just feeling like a complete person. Mm-hmm.
And we know it's rare and we know we're lucky. I mean, we have like a bunch of people online who like think our friendship is fake and for publicity. I kind of love it because there's these people who are like, they're a fake group of friends. They just want publicity.
This girl online was like, you're not real friends because you didn't tweet about so-and-so's something, something.
What?
And we're like, you know why? Because we're talking to that bitch in her face. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We had a real conversation about it that wasn't on display for you, TR70AA Twitter.
But I love that people like look at our friendship and they're like, it's so great. It can't be real. It's like our friend Cass, she was like, guys, I got the best compliment today. Somebody said that I looked photoshopped in a picture. And I was like, if they think it's fake, it's awesome.
That is hilarious.
I mean, just to put a point on it, like, I really think that, like, you know, you're talking about like no matter what field you're in, like, I feel like people may be like, well, I don't have friends like this. Or I'm, you probably do. You probably do have friends like this. You probably have one friend like this at least. And maybe you're not like at peak friendship. So like, just dig into that friendship. Tell that person that you love love them.
It takes time. Kayla and I have known each other for, like 10 years now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we've lived in across the country from each other for a majority of that. But it's getting on the phone when you need that support. It's
getting on the flight.
Asking for what you need.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Asking what other people need. I think, you know, when Anthony Bourdain died a couple of weeks ago, I think there was a sort of outpouring on social media where everyone was like, reach out to your friends, check on your friends. And like, I talk a lot about mental health issues. I've dealt with depression, I've dealt with major anxiety issues all the time. And like, I had friends being like, hey, just checking in. Uh-huh. And and I was fine. Like, I was great. I was in Texas. I was like in a pool somewhere. I was like, I'm good, guys. It's National Rosé Day. But I had people check in, and I think checking in with each other is important. I also think my advice when it comes to like finding your tribe is, one, don't be afraid to be vulnerable. Don't be afraid to say I love you when you feel it, because it's not about them. It's about you. Mm-hmm. Also, you don't know who really, really, really needs to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes people really, really need to hear it. You might be the only person that says that to that person in a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's thing one. And thing two is not to be afraid to be alone for a little while, because you're not going to find great people if your world is crowded with bad people.
Mm-hmm.
If you're crowded with garbage friends.
If you're worried about letting friends go because you're worried about not having friends, but they're the wrong friends.
If you're surrounded.
Oprah would call that an aha moment.
Ooh, I love it.
That is a very, very good.
Really, if you're encircled by people who don't support you, there's no room for somebody to get in who does. So,
and then be your own best friend. Like, love yourself so hard.
Aisha always brings it back to masturbation.
I do. Guys, because I really feel like self-love is important. I feel like self-care is really critical. And I feel like if you don't know your vagina, if you're not friendly and familiar with, and then how can anybody else be familiar with your vagina? That's all I'm saying. It's really simple. It's really basic.
On the note of saying how much you love someone, we love you guys.
Yes.
And we thank you so much for coming today.
Where can people find you to Photoshop pictures of you guys? What are the social handles where they can
just
do that?
At Aisha Tyler on all platforms.
I'm Cadley Mack on everything. I think I might just like legally need to change my name to Cadley Mack, because like half the people in my life just call me that.
No one knows your actual name.
I know.
I accidentally, I think, referred to you as that, like talking to Jenna the other week. Mackenzie.
I don't think Paul Wesley knows my name. we just hired Paul to direct an episode of Roswell.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But like, I still don't think he knows my name.
Well, he won't know it when he looks at your misspelled chair.
Yeah.
I should just get at Cadley Mac on my chair.
Well, thank you guys.
We love you guys.
So fun.
Thank you.
I hope you guys had as much fun listening to us talking with Karina and Aisha as we did recording it. But in 2 weeks, we have a new episode for you guys.
Bree Emery is here of Design Love Fest. She is so creative and so inspiring. We cannot wait for you to hear this next episode. So make sure you tune in 2 weeks.
Directionally Challenged is a production of Pineapple Productions. Producer and editor, Melissa DeMont.
Post-production sound by Chris Henry.
Production assistance by Julie Carley.
Logo design by Natalia Vasquez.
And music by Joe King.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.